Welcome to our Farming Water Scotland podcast series. Over this series, we're looking at various mitigation options, guidance and farmers' experience to help manage and improve water quality on the farm and surrounding area. In today's podcast, we'll be discussing Scotland's bathing waters with Jackie McComb and Rose Stidson from SEPA. Your hosts today are Pete Wright from SEPA and myself, Fiona Salter from SSE Consulting. Hi and welcome everybody. Jackie and Ruth, do you want to just do a quick introduction?
Yeah, hi there, Jackie McComb. I have worked with SEPA a long time and I am part of SEPA's National Rural Unit. So I'm actively involved in doing farm visits and giving advice to farmers on what they can do to reduce diffuse pollution on the farm.
Thanks. And then Ruth?
Hi, my name's Ruth Stidson. Thank you for inviting me along today. It's both a pleasure and a privilege to be here. I'm SEPA Science Lead for Bathing Waters and I've been working in this area for 2 decades now.
Perfect, thank you. And then Pete.
Yeah, I'm Pete Wright. I work with in the water industry and rural environment sector within SEPA, and I've been on the Farming Water podcast for a little while, and apparently me and you now are co-hosts.
Yeah, which sounds
very exciting. So thanks very much for that, and thanks again to Jackie and Ruth for joining us along today. Bathing waters is a hot topic, and with the weather recently turning nicer, more people are visiting beaches, and we're starting to see a real kind of increasing awareness of what bathing water is, what a failing bathing water is. There's quite a lot of terminology which is coming out nowadays, which people just kind of get a little bit confused about. So I thought today it'll be a great opportunity to have a little bit of a chat. We've got some experts in the room. Sorry to call you experts, but you are today. And I thought it'd be just good to kind of demystify some of the language around bathing waters and kind of look at the role that SEPA takes, look at the role that different sections of industry take, and what people are doing to kind of address some of these problems. So if it's all right, I'm going to start off with a question, and myself and Fiona do a bit of a tag team with the questions. I'm going to try and avoid asking questions about what SEPA's role is, because I should really know that as I work for SEPA.
I'll do that one.
So what I'll do, I'll kind of try and point you some questions about the general kind of what bathing waters are. So I'm going to come to you first, Ruth, if it's okay. Could you just kind of provide an overview of what Scotland's bathing waters are, what they mean, and why they're important to Scotland, if that's okay?
Sure, absolutely. Well, should we start with what a bathing water is?
Perfect.
So it's an area of water. It can be either coastal or it can be inland. And it's where traditionally a large number of people bathe. So they use the water for swimming, paddling, dipping. And they're areas that are designated by Scottish ministers. And they're designated to protect human health. So that's what a bathing water is in Scotland. And we've currently got 90 of them, 87 around the coastline and 3 are inland. And, you know, they're there for people to enjoy. And they have their own regulations. And that's what we work with to, you know, to make sure they meet the standards and where necessarily to improve the water quality so that people can enjoy our waters.
Brilliant. So you just mentioned there there's 90. Why isn't everywhere a bathing water? Just out of interest.
Okay, well, it is Scottish ministers that choose where bathing waters are. But it's about, if we designate somewhere, there's a lot of resource that goes into it. And we sample it during the bathing season. So bathing season runs from the 1st of June to 15th of September. And at most sites, we take a sample every week. And that takes resource. So we focus that resource on the areas where most people use. But we do have an open process that you can find on our website. If people want to put in an application for a bathing water to be designated, they can do, and that's what the community did at Ballyhoolish Peninsula, which has been designated for the first time this year.
No, brilliant. So we're targeting the resource where people are actually using that facility as, like you said, whatever it may be, swimming, paddling, whatever it is. So it's to protect human health, use our resources appropriately, and just make sure we're doing the right job in the right places, which is a perfect example of that kind of stuff. Good stuff. Thanks very much, Ruth. I know what a bathing water is now.
Ruth, you just touched on it, but what is SEPA's role with regard to bathing waters, like week to week, month to month, year to year, if you want to give a overview of what SEPA actually do?
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So we've got 4 main strands to our role. There's our monitoring, our classifying, warning and informing, and improving. So if we start off with our monitoring, This is when we send a team of sampling officers to all of our beaches to actually take a sample of our water. And that gets taken to our accredited laboratories. We've got one at Eurocentral between Glasgow and Edinburgh, and we've got one at Aberdeen. And it's analysed for the fecal indicator organisms, E. coli and Intestinal Enterococci. And those results are available, get put onto our website within a few days. And generally what we find is that most of the samples that we take on most of our bathing waters are really clean. But every so often we get a sample that doesn't, and then that's fast-tracked to our regulatory teams to decide what action is appropriate to take. And then at the end of each year, what we do is we give each bathing water a classification, which is like a grade or a score. And that's based on 4 years of data, and that can run through excellent, good, sufficient, or poor. We've also got a program about warning and informing people about water quality. And this is so that people can make informed choices. Now, we know that at some of our bathing waters, water quality can vary a lot day to day. And the main driver of that is heavy rain. And heavy rain can cause a deterioration in water quality through one of two main pathways. Either it can cause spills from our sewage network, or it can cause wash off of rural diffuse pollution. And because those are caused by heavy rain, we can predict them. So during the bathing season, every morning, we run models to predict likely water quality. And the predicted water quality is displayed on our website and also on electronic signs at 30 locations. So I've spoken about how we actually monitor the water quality and about how we warn and inform. And on that topic with the warning and informing, if we did find there was, if we knew about a pollution incident, our local regulatory teams can work with local authorities to ensure notices can get put up at any bathing water and people are informed. But then there's improving water quality. Now, this is about actually making the water cleaner. There's a number of ways we can do this. It can be capital investment in our sewage infrastructure. Mm-hmm. It could be making sure that our infrastructure is working as appropriate, as intended. And it's also about reducing impact from rural diffuse pollution, from dogs and girls. And there's actions that people can take as well, such as picking up after their dogs, not encouraging goals, yeah. Only flushing appropriate items so we don't get blockages. But throughout all those four strands of work, that's our overall program. And then there's that final stage is the really important one about how we make our water quality cleaner.
Because you test weekly throughout the summer. What do those test results actually tell you?
So they tell us the fecal indicator organisms that are in the water. Mm-hmm. So that's E. coli and Intestinal Enterococci. And what we normally find is that our results are normally low. The vast majority of samples at the vast majority of beaches come back really clean. But occasionally we do get a high result. And if that happens, we do initial analysis looking at the DNA. And through analysing that through techniques we've developed in recent years, we can tell if the pollution has come from human sources, from ruminant sources, from dogs or from gulls. And what that enables us to do is to tackle the right source. So if we can identify what's caused that pollution, then we can go and look at improving and reducing the impact from that particular source. Yeah. And we do know it varies. We have some beaches where we know the main problems are human sources, other beaches where we know the main problems are from ruminants. We've got others where we know gulls are the main cause. And there's some beaches that have a variety. Mm-hmm. But knowing what causes the pollution allows us to tackle it much more effectively.
Yeah, just a lot more efficiently. And you've got that backing, like the data backing in background. That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Brilliant. That's a really comprehensive answer to what CEPA's role is there. A lot goes on. I think the seasons from May through to September, but it's a whole year round kind of activity to make sure that this kind of gets delivered. You've mentioned some of the kind of things that could happen to make bathing waters struggle to meet the standards, but it sounds like a lot's been done, which has resulted in some successes. Is there any chance you can talk about some of those kind of successful projects that have improved some bathing waters in Scotland, if that's okay, Ruth?
Sure, absolutely. So in 2015, we had new regulations that came in that had higher standards for water quality. And back in 2015, we had 17 bathing waters that were classified as poor, didn't meet the standard. Of those 17, 15 are now meeting sufficient or better classification, which is a fantastic improvement. And we also had a big increase in the number of excellent and the number of good classifications. So air bathing water is a really good example. It used to reliably not meet the standards. And there was a huge programme of work put in there. Scottish Water undertook big programmes of work improving, reducing the impact from their infrastructure. But also there was a lot of work undertaken by CEPRA and by rural land managers through our priority catchment programme to reduce the amount of pollution that was going in from agriculture. And combining those two processes, reducing the impact from sewage, reducing the amount of agriculture, has really made the water cleaner there. And Ayr South Beach, one of the most popular bathing waters in Scotland, now routinely meets the standards.
That's a fantastic example of just the kind of thing that whole holistic picture of bathing waters kind of brings together. It's not just about looking at one source and one solution. It's about bringing the number of people together. That's a fantastic example. And I suppose those kind of projects can be picked up across the country. And you've got working together with Scottish Water land managers and whoever else may be just to kind of make those improvements as and when they're required. But I suppose one of the really challenging things is keeping on top of things as well. So you talked about the amount of communication you have with different partners and that kind of stuff. Just kind of what's one of the biggest challenges when it comes to keeping on top of it? You know, is there anything which is a challenge when it comes to making sure the bathing waters is a priority still, or is it definitely one of those things now because of the work that you've done that it is front and center at people's minds?
I think it's front and center of people's mind, and you know, it's one of our areas that has, you know, that has a really high media profile. But what's happened is what we've seen over the last few years is that the popularity of wild swimming has absolutely skyrocketed, and with that has become increased expectations in water quality from water users, from the media, and from elected officials. So within CEPA, you know, this work area gets a really high focus. And one of the things I enjoy about my role the most is that I interact with teams across the whole organisation. I see myself as a linchpin. So we've got our regulatory teams who work really, really hard all year round. And for example, one of the key things they do is they go out and undertake inspections to ensure that all the assets are working as designed. Obviously, we keep on top of this through our monitoring programme. You know, if we do get a deterioration, we do see it in our results. But also we've got a whole unit working with farmers, working with rural line managers who stay on top of that side. You know, that unit very much works really hard to ensure that the progress has been made, is kept, and also that where more is needed, that gets prioritised. So, you know, it's just a huge team effort across the organisation. It's an area I love working in.
You can tell, Ruth, that you're so positive. Because obviously this is a Farming Water Scotland podcast, so it's intended for like land managers. So Jackie, looking at how we can improve bathing waters, and like what can land managers actually do to keep improving bathing waters and across Scotland, looking at the regulations, what they can do day to day and the long term.
There's actually quite a lot of things that land managers can do. As Ruth said, the season goes from basically now, or from June right through to September. So one of the first key things you can do is think about areas on your own farm where you've got water course boundaries. So that can be like small ditches to burns to bigger rivers. So check the boundaries along them. Look at your fences and any boundaries. Make sure that they're fully maintained. If there's any gaps or openings, especially in grazing fields where during these seasons stock could access, you want to try and put in repairs, get them stopped, the access going through. That will go such a long way. And it also has an extra benefit. This will help you minimise the risk of poaching from stock in these areas, which keeps you on the right side of the regulations. And in general, it cuts down the risk of pollution and the fecal bacteria getting into the water course. Another key part is thinking about the steading. So you're thinking about your contaminated drainage areas on the steading, making sure that it's not getting into surface water drains. Key areas, things to think about are bedded sheds. We sometimes see a wee bit of seepage coming out of a bedded shed, and more often than not, there's a downpipe right at the corner. So just making sure there's nothing going into that surface water drain that shouldn't be going in. Thinking about cattle walkways. Really want to get the drainage from their shed onto some vegetated ground. But just what we want to avoid is it's getting into the farm's clean surface water system. Handling areas are yards that are maybe only accessed by stock in the summer months, and it might just be for a short period of time. You may have a drain in there. Just protect it, you know, in the short time the cattle are on there. So if you're doing work in a handling area, just cover the drain temporarily while the stock's on there till that yard's cleaned, and then it can be opened back up to let the clean water go. And in general, it's just thinking about keeping the clean water that's coming from roofs and clean yards away from the dirty yard areas. You want to reduce the amount of, clean water effluent that's produced. So just... it's a good time just now to have a think, look at the boundaries in the field, look at the steading. And then one of the biggest risks, I guess, is when it actually comes to doing slurry spreading activities. So before you actually undertake spreading, have a look again at the fields that are going to get the slurry. Check for broken field drains. If you see that type of thing, avoid spreading over these areas. Treat them like you would a burn, you know, give it a good buffer round about. Think about the equipment that's going to be used. Check it's in a good state of repair. So like umbilical pipes, just have a good look. There's no part of it's showing signs of wear and tear, because what you don't want is a burst happening and then that can then run off land and get into a water course if it's nearby. Ruth talked about how we get deteriorations in wet weather conditions. So one of the key things farmers can do is check the forecast before you carry out any slurry spreading operations. Yeah. If there is heavy rain predicted within 48 hours of the time you're proposing to spread, delay it. If possible, delay that spreading by a day or two, and that will hugely reduce the risk of runoff coming from that operations. Once slurry spreading is actually taking place, again, you've got to keep a 10-metre buffer away from any of these ditches, burns that are nearby. But the thing to remember is that also includes any that are maybe running behind a fence. You might think the fence is the barrier, but you've got to think of where the burn is or the watercourse is. It might be behind a dike in the field, but make sure you've got that 10-metre buffer. And sometimes you need to think about possibly increasing that. So if you've got land that's quite steeply sloping and there's a water course near the bottom, think about maybe just going a bit more than 10 metres just to reduce that risk of the runoff coming. And by doing all these things, then the risk will be really greatly reduced from the types of activities that farm landowners are doing.
Thank you, Jack. It's so interesting to think, like, because if you're thinking just like, on their own, they might seem like small and significant actions, but when you put them in a whole catchment level, they can have dramatic impact on improving the exactly. water quality.
Which is the whole problem of diffuse pollution. It's individually wee minor things, but when you put them together collectively on a catchment scale, then they do have a big impact. And it's, you know, especially if your farm is in a catchment that does have a bathing water. See, we know how many there is across Scotland now. So be aware of that and think these wee steps you can take, you can be feeding into that and making a big improvement over time.
Yeah. Going back to talking about, obviously, like if you're fencing off watercourses for livestock on your farm, that might potentially be the access that the livestock have to the water. What type of, like, pop-up equipment is available now to ensure that the livestock can get access to the water, but you can still be compliant and reduce poaching risk?
Yeah, so in some cases you might be looking at alternative watering source. So there's things like solar troughs, solar pumps that can feed a trough. You get pasture pumps. It might even be you could take from feed a trough from a main supply, thinking about that. But especially in bathing water catchments, we really want to try and reduce the amount of cattle that are relying purely on the water course for their source of watering.
Is there any way, like on SEPA's website, or obviously Farmwatch Scotland have got information on alternative watering, things like that, but within the catchment, is there specific guidance within the bathing waters that all like the public and land managers can get to like fact sheets or in further information to help improve the quality of the bathing waters?
Certainly from the land manager side, we really direct a lot of farmers to the Farming and Water Scotland webpage. We think all the information you need is there. Myself and colleagues in the team that I'm in were more than happy to be contacted to give advice to farmers if they're asking for it. So certainly from that land agricultural point of view, that we're happy to do that. Ruth can maybe give a wee bit more on for kind of general public side of things.
Yeah, Ruth, have you got, so if the members of the public or land managers want to find out a little bit more information about the bathing waters and what they are, where they are and any other information, where's the best place they can go and have a look for that?
Okay, well, on our website, we've got some FAQs, so some frequently asked questions generally about our bathing waters. Although certainly, you know, our teams, as Jackie spoke about, you know, there's very bespoke areas for different industries out there. So I'd always say for the farming community to go to the resources that have been specifically designed for them. But every year at the start of the season, we put out our media releases. And we do tell the public about the actions that they can take, such as picking up after their dogs if they own one, not feeding gulls because it encourages unnatural behaviour and human food isn't healthy for them. But also, you know, only flushing appropriate items so that we don't cause blockers and cause blockages and cause sewers to overflow. So yeah, we always remind people, the public, of that in our pre-season media announcements.
I found that really interesting. I think it's just like looking at the whole of Scotland and seeing how everybody can make a little bit of difference and dramatically improve. Because yeah, you have seen the wild swimming has just skyrocketed over the past few years. I live in Edinburgh and even down like in Wardy Bay, which when I was a little girl, I wouldn't have swam there. But now it's like coaching on, like, today is a really sunny day and it will be absolutely packed. And just to see that the small differences can make people have access to water that they didn't used to be, or they weren't safe to use in the past, is such a great resource.
I think another thing is it's the bathing water is kind of our the bit that we talk about, the end bit, the fact that it's a clean bathing water and people are safe to go for a swim in there. It's the knock-on impacts of having that good standard, that excellent standard bathing water, so people can comfortably go there. It has a great knock-on effect to local economy, you know, human health. Mm. You know, it just has that positive impact. So I think it's that's another fantastic driver to make sure these things continue to get delivered, because it's not just about water quality; it's the knock-on impacts. Like so many things, when it comes to regulating the environment, it's not just the environment that's getting protected; it's all those other things that knock on the back of it as well. So I think that's another really positive side to look at it as well. It's not just about fixing a problem. It's about fixing a problem and coming up with a load more added benefits to it, which can really make sure that these areas can continue to be a success. So I think it's a fantastic story to be able to tell. And Ruth and Jackie, I know I work for SEPA, but I've learned some great things during this conversation, and I'm sure it'll be on the back of my mind every time I have a conversation with a land manager or whoever it may be, and they've got an impact on the bathing water. So it certainly helped my knowledge today. So thanks for that.
Thank you for that really interesting discussion and insight into bathing waters in Scotland. We will put a list of all the current bathing waters on the webpage, so you can see whether it falls in your catchment or not. And thank you for joining us today. We'll save all the links and documents and guidance notes that have been discussed throughout this podcast episode on the webpage. Please get in touch if you want to find out more or need further information. If you enjoyed listening, please like, subscribe and follow our podcast wherever you listen to them. And you can listen back to all previous podcast episodes we produce for Farming Water Scotland on any podcast provider. Farming Water Scotland is funded by Scottish Government and delivered by SAC Consulting in partnership with SEPA to help farmers and land managers reduce diffuse pollution risks and benefits of farm business.